up. Here we go.
This is Felger and Mass.
Yeah, Rex Ryan here.
I hate guests.
Yep.
There's no reason to touch them.
Keep it in your pants.
Why would you do that?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I need to know the lowest ranking in scoring, league MVP in NHL history. And if Patrice Bergeron's going to break the mold. He's 31st in the league in scoring right now. I can't imagine there's been many, if any, MVPs who ranked in the 30s in scoring in NHL history. But you tell me, folks, okay? So that's on the table. Red Sox are on the table. Whatever you want in this final hour. Billy in Burlington, for example, back to the Red Sox. Go ahead, Billy.
And don't forget, Mikey, we got to play Tampa Bay 3 more times before the season ends. Now, Maz, I have a question for you, buddy. Do you think Mookie Betts is a 5-tool player?
How's his arm?
It's okay. I mean, yeah, he's close, Billy. Why? What's the point?
Okay. They already got him angry for, I think, making him go to arbitration. Okay? This contract should have been done like 2 years ago for like 10 years. A 10-year contract I would have given this kid because, to me, he's the best player on the team. He's a stud. All right? If you go out and sign J.D. Martinez, say goodbye to Mookie Betts next year. He'll be gone.
Okay, well,
he'll
he can't.
Your market and be gone, and because then you've got to sign Chris Sale also.
Okay, Bill, I'm just going to stop you. He can't go anywhere for 3 years, right? He's got 3 years of arbitration.
That's right.
So he's under team control for 3 years. But I think it's one of the underplayed stories on the team. They can't get Mookie Betts to sign a contract with him.
No, and it wasn't just, you know, when he says they should have, they tried last year. They tried to sign him for like 5 years and 100, and he said no. Now, look, I think that's low. Okay, I mean, to me, a guy like Betts, you
I thought it was pretty fair. If, and I'm sorry to cut you off, because at that point he had 4 years of team control left. So you give him $20 million a year in 4 years where he's not going to get 20. Maybe that last year of arbitration he gets 20. But so you're overpaying him in the first 3 years, paying him what he would get in year four, and then year five's an underpayment. So you're buying him out of 1 year of free agency. I don't know. I thought that was a fair offer if that's what it was on its face.
Yeah, but I think that this guy's going to hit the market and make how much more?
30.
Okay, so to me, you got to go 8 and 200 to sign a guy like that. That's what I think. I just think that they were low. But that aside, he doesn't want to be here, clearly, long term. This is a problem. So I would have signed Betts, too. My hope now, I'm telling you, this contract thing with Betts has opened my eyes a little bit. You don't pick a fight like that unless you got a little bit of an attitude. So he's clearly got it. Maybe now it comes out. Maybe it comes out because no Pedroia there to start the year. He won his arbitration case. He's probably feeling pretty good about himself, if not the team. Maybe he takes control of that clubhouse a little bit.
Anthony in Northboro, hi.
Hey, Mike. So I know you may not have a lot of confidence in Sweeney making a move at the deadline, but I think he may be better off at this type of deadline move where he has to identify, you know, like which young talent to move. All of his moves up to this point that you question, you know, have been about, you know, trading a pick away or picking up a free agent. And I think, you know, given his track record with drafting young and finding young talent, I have a little more confidence he'd make the right call, especially for, you know, a proven player like McDonough instead of a scrub like Lee Stepniak.
So here's why, and fair enough, Anthony, it's still dealing with him evaluating young talent. So, yes, he should have something there. Also, they're in a pretty good position of strength. Meaning, if they do nothing, I don't think fans are going to be pissed. And they're going to be a competitive team. They should be a competitive team. And everyone's going to think that they're on the road. I mean, it feels like at this point, whatever happens is gravy. One and done would be bad. I think they would catch some rightful grief, as they should. But the expectation was just that they develop some players, have a good regular season, make the postseason, ideally win a round. And anything beyond that should be gravy in terms of your expectations with the team. So they're dealing, and they have, you know, a really good young system. And if they do nothing, they still have all these good young players coming up. So they don't have, they're not forced to make a move. They're not forced to reach. They're not forced to overpay. You just sit back, and if something that is, if makes sense for you and you win the trade, then you make it. And so that, like, that's a good spot to be in.
No, absolutely. They are. They're in a strong place. The only thing that could put pressure on them is, again, who's played the best for them this year?
Bergeron, Chara, Marchand. The vets.
Right. So how many more years are you going to have those guys at that level?
And the kids have been great, but you've really been led by those guys. And I think you're absolutely right to say, is this the last true time you're going to see Chara, Bergeron? Chara, just stop there. Krejci if you want. But that you're going to see Chara and Bergeron play as well as they are right now together in the same year?
Maybe.
It could be it. Like, this could be the last roundup for those two together playing like this.
So I think there is. I think there's a little bit of pressure from that standpoint to maybe, okay, let's see if, you know, who knows, maybe we can make a little run. But at the same time, like...
See, I've always felt in the back of my head that those two had one run left in them. I didn't think it would be this year, but I thought, you know, if you can extend Chara just 1 or 2 years, he hangs on, and he's, you know, your third or fourth defenseman by this stage, and Bergeron's still at the tail end of his prime, and in a couple years, those two guys, with all their experience, and what, they just string something together, and those two old guys get one more run. I always felt they had one more run. I didn't think it would be this year. But, no, hey, but maybe this is it now, and take advantage of it.
I mean, maybe you get Bergeron on the TB12 method, and you get another 5 years out of him.
Whatever it takes, man. What it call, give Alex a call there, Patrice. Here's Brody in Maine. Go ahead, Brody.
Hey, Mike, couple quick things on the bees. You know, you might be upset about, you know, your Bergeron take now, but take solace in the fact that under Cassidy, we're talking about Patrice as a potential Selke and Hart Trophy winner, and the young guys are playing good, and the already pathetic Claude defenders on the beat look even more pathetic after this year.
Oh, what a route. And what a route that one was, Brody.
Yeah, my second question is, given all the grief you've given Neely over the last 2 years, I'm wondering when he's going to strut down from Causeway Street and stick his sea bass in your face.
Yeah, well, how about a big fat I told you so, Cam? It's time to come in here and, yeah, do that thing.
I mean, look, they should be feeling pretty good about themselves right now. And again, there's no way to tell how this goes over the long term or even in the spring. They could get in the first round and lose. Like, I wouldn't rule that out for a second.
And that would turn the whole thing. That would leave a sour taste in your mouth. Like, oh, yeah, good. Yeah, congratulations on the President's Trophy and the MVP, Patrice. Same old Bruins, one and done. Thanks.
Now, look, on the other perspective is, you know, and obviously this is an element in the equation for them. But if you're a fan right now and you've been on the fence, or even if you got out, would you buy season tickets right now? I would.
Yeah, why wouldn't
you? It's getting close to that time. Yeah.
I would. I'd look at it and say, hey, they got something going here. Listen, they're going to be good for it. Look at the defenseman. That kid's a stud. McAvoy is the...
You see that goal last night?
Oh, my God. Like, and you know what? If Krug...
I mean, he set it up, but the move he made coming over the blue
ridiculous.
Line, tremendous.
And you know what? If I got to give credit to Krug, whom I like to pick on. If McAvoy had made the pass that Krug made to send Bergeron in, I'd have had my pants off, for crying out loud. So their defenseman factored into the offense all over the place last night. But that aside, like, if you're a Bruins fan... McAvoy, the young guys, the way it's all going right now, like, I'd be looking at it going, you know what?
Yeah, the arrow's pointing up with all this young talent, but then there's also that other guy that pops up my shoulder that will tell me, they once traded Sagan.
See, Sweeney's different, though. I do think that he is committed to the... So the question now is he committed to the youth to a fault? Like, is he willing to identify which ones that they got to move and then move them, identify the right ones and get returned back, or is he just going to sit there?
The lowest scoring league MVP in NHL history, Jimmy, you give me Corey Perry in 2011 with 98 points, but where did he rank? That's what I need to know. Not the point total, where he ranks. Where did that rank him? Where did those 98 points rank him? Marty St. Louis, we mentioned this earlier, in 04, had 94 points. Won the MVP. The points don't mean much to me because there was a down, you know, no one scored. So was Corey Perry a top? I mean, Corey Perry that year scored 50 goals. The year he was league MVP, he was a 50-goal scorer in an era when that's really hard to do, get to 50. Who's the lowest scoring league MVP to this point in league history? And does that make it impossible for Patrice Bergeron to win as the 31st highest scorer in the league?
He was third in the league in scoring that year.
Perry was?
Yeah.
Okay, so I need to know the ranking. That's what's relevant, the ranking.
Daniel Sedin was first at 104, and Perry was third at 98.
Zach and Attleboro, quickly on the Red Sox.
Hi there, guys. I guess I was looking to see if you agree or disagree with me here. A lot of people keep talking about the Red Sox, they need another power bat. I think personally that another starting pitcher is much more important than that. We don't have a deep starting pitching rotation.
Oh, God, do I disagree. You go six deep of legit major league talent. Legit. Sale, Price, Porcello.
Pomerantz. Eduardo Rodriguez.
And then Wright. David Wright, the knuckleballer.
Steven,
whatever. And if you want to say he's a wild card because of his health or his weight or his off-field.
Or his suspension coming.
Yeah, exactly. He's off-field stuff, like, you know, sketchy guy, fine. But that's your sixth guy. you're in good shape there.
They've invested enough in the starting pitching.
Come on.
The last thing I want them to do is go out and get another one.
Especially with all those playoff wins.
Yeah, but if it doesn't work, okay, fine. You've already mortgaged how much money and prospects, how many resources have you given up to build that pitching staff?
Get some with playoff wins.
Just too many. It's enough. No more. Get a hitter.
Coming up next, Dave Dombrowski says that he's got a lot of people coming up to him in the coffee shop telling him, do nothing. Are you one of these people? Where are these people? I would like to talk to these people.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger. I like anti-coupadoukaboo. And Mass. Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, I mean, I read some stuff. But it's interesting when you say that, and I'm sure that there is a segment. But I will just say, as I'm walking in here, I have a few people saying, "Don't do anything. Don't make any moves." You know. So I mean, there is really, you know, when you say that, I go out every morning. I have a cup of coffee and sit at a Dunkin' Donuts, and I bet you I have about 10 people a day that talk to me, and it's really split. So I mean, your pulse, you must hear that, and probably that's a louder voice. But people are very supportive of don't do anything that you think is unwise.
I'm sorry, so you're being approached by Red Sox fans who...
But I sit in Dunkin' Donuts by myself and they come over and they talk to me.
No, and you're talking to a segment of Red Sox fans who don't make any moves?
Yeah, and individually, not a big group, but on an individual basis, yeah. Don't do anything unwise.
Well, don't do anything and don't do anything unwise.
There's both.
You can hear it. Wait a minute. Hold on. You, the president of baseball operations, you sit in a Dunkin' Donuts, which, you know, everyone sits in a Dunkin' Donuts every once in a while, but you get bothered by how many Red Sox fans? And you sit there and you take it for...
10 a day, he said.
10 a... Huh?
And not even as a group.
Right.
It's not like a group session. It's one by one.
Yeah, take a number.
Yeah, it's 10 of us. We go in single file, take a numbers right.
And we've had people tweet in who have said, yep. I caught up with him at the Kenmore Square Dunkin' Donuts one morning. Another guy says, nope, Cleveland Circle, he's in there every now and again as well. So apparently this is legit. He will sit in a Dunkin' Donuts and drink his coffee and let you come up and talk baseball with him.
I bet you could even find him in Watertown Square.
To me, feels like seven versions of hell.
Can you imagine Cam Neely doing this with Bruins fans?
How about Belichick?
Oh, God, right. Yeah.
Bill, yeah, I was wondering about Butler.
Yeah, well,
Dave, you mind if I pull up a seat? I'm gonna sit. You know why I like coming down here? Because he's probably, it sounds like he's doing it in Florida too. You know why I like coming down here? It's like he did with the team this winter. Nothing. I got my mother's place in Cape Coral. I wake up. I go on the boat. Throw a line in the water. You want to come on the boat? Like, how did you put up with that?
Oh, the visuals.
Get the coffee. Go.
Oh my God. So anyway.
Yeah, I'll have a large buttery toffee nut. I heard Maz do the ad on the radio. It sounds good. I'll have one of those and some munchkins, which reminds me, Dave, is Pedroia coming back? Like, I wondered about Pedroia.
But then that whole other piece, do you think he really has people coming up to him and say, Dave, do nothing. We love the fact you've done nothing. Don't do anything.
Yeah, I bet you.
After two straight years of being one and done, you think fans really feel nothing? That, you know what? You've done nothing. That's great.
No, you might have had a couple. But I'm willing to bet there are people out there that feel like I do, that say, you know what, don't do anything stupid. Okay, now. You're already whiffed.
So at this stage, right, this stage, don't throw good money after bad. Right?
Looking at the landscape right now, yeah, please do nothing. Don't sign J.D. Martinez.
Right, see, that's the part that Dombrowski's not sharing.
Right.
That they go up to him and say, yeah, Dave, you already screwed it up. So, so don't do anything else now, because that would be dumb.
Oh, the Dunkin' Donuts visual is just...
It is, it's priceless.
Oh, it's just too much for me. It's just... Wow.
Yeah, I'll have the turkey sausage wake-up wrap with the no cheese and the veggie egg white instead of the yolk. I don't want the yolk.
Piece of advice? Tell those guys in the outfield, hey, stop with the dancing, huh? Is it Ben Nintendo, the JBJ, the other guy? I mean, come on. I can't watch this.
On and on and on. One is single file, 10 a day. It's unbelievable. Alex in Winchester. Go ahead, Alex.
Man, you know way too much about baseball to say that Mookie Betts' arm is just okay. If he played for the Yankees or the 76ers or the Seahawks, you would say you have a Mookie Betts in your can. But for the fact that he plays for the Red Sox, he's a foundational player that you really give no credit to. He played for almost a whole second half of the year last year with a bum wrist. If Nomar or David Price
or any other current Red Sox did that, you know, they're on the disabled list in a half a second. I think you need to give Mookie Betts a lot more credit. You really do.
Yeah, look, he doesn't have a great arm. I mean, with all due respect. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't.
He's turned around from the back of right field and thrown guys out at third base, for heaven's sake. I mean, what are you watching?
Yeah, he doesn't have a great arm. Trust me on that one.
He has a way above average arm.
He has an okay arm.
Vladimir Guerrero.
Shut up.
Give me a number, Mass.
Okay, he doesn't have a great arm. And the other thing is, look, I like Betts. He's a good player. And I'm starting to like him more because of his attitude and the stand.
Yeah, because he's screwed because he's messing with the team.
A little bit. Yeah. But I also think it shows that he is sort of willing to go against the grain a little bit. And that's a big thing. That's a leadership thing. There's a quality there about, you know, defying sort of the just going along with it because that's the way it is and saying, screw you, I'm not doing it that way, as long as you don't do it too much. So I'm okay with that part of Betts. My criticisms of Betts, and I say criticisms, he is who he is. You're not a foundational piece the way people think he is if you can be pitched to a point where you don't have the same kind of power. He's not that big. He can't hit the ball out to the opposite field, not with any consistency. That's a major hole.
We've got Alan in Tiverton on the Bees. Hi, Alan.
Hey, Felger. So I got to thinking about your points on Bergeron and how he's finally accepted as an MVP candidate, but I started to get frustrated. I want to get your take. Should we be frustrated as Bruins fans based on the fact that he has had this in him his entire career and it's now coming out this year? I almost want to know, has he become a byproduct of the system that was in place when Claude was here?
A little bit.
And what does that do to the complexion of his entire career?
A little bit, Alan.
I'll hang up and listen to your dog.
Yep. I mean, I've sort of been this up about Claude. Yeah, he won cups with him and went deep with him, but were you still as good as you could possibly be? Like, was he the only coach that would have won you that cup, and did he hold some guys back in the course of it that, I know this is just something I brought up in the past, and Bergeron is one you got to think about. Because it is different under Cassidy. Cassidy uses him in a little bit more of an offensive role. And it's a wonkish thing. I keep bringing it up, but it's a little thing. Patrice Bergeron gets more offensive zone starts under Cassidy than he did under Claude, meaning a face-off in the offensive zone. Cassidy will throw Bergeron's line out there in an offensive situation, not worrying about who's on the other side, not worrying about matching Bergeron defensively against someone. He will throw Bergeron in that offensive zone face-off situation more than Claude ever did. And also, there is a little less matching with Bergeron and the other team's top line. Bergeron saw plenty of Jonta last night, and you know he will see the opponent's good players, but it's not... Cassidy isn't as tied to it as Julian was. Julian almost used Bergeron like a checking line and got offense on top of it, but used him, you know, just to check the other team's, you know, it was always that matchup where Cassidy's a little bit more, no, you go out there and score. I don't need you to go out there and just check the other guy's top score. And so, did I say Jonta? I meant Gaudreau.
Yeah, you meant Gaudreau.
So I think coaching's been a big part of the offensive difference in Bergeron. It's been a big, big part of it.
I think it's a huge part of it. He's been liberated, is what it is.
And he's used as the chief offensive weapon on the power play. The chief, the gun is cocked in that right face-off circle on the power play. He is the chief option on the power play.
So to me, like, I look at Bergeron and I say, even if it's a jump from 25 goals to 30, that's 20%. Like, if Cassidy can get 20% more out of him than Julian did, then Julian wasn't using him right. That's a big jump. Again, and right now he looks like a 30-goal scorer. He doesn't look like a 20-goal scorer. He looks like a 30-goal scorer.
But just like Claude, like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't wrong.
No, he just put the emphasis on the reaction instead of the proaction.
Right, he's a little conservative, a little... Right, exactly, Mass. Exactly.
So my other question is, how much of... And there's no way to answer this, but how much of Cassidy using Bergeron the way he uses him is related to Krejci?
I think it's more related to the fact that their third and fourth lines have been awesome, and he can trust the Nash line more than Krejci, that he can trust Nash, Backes, and Heinen to go out and face those guys a lot of nights.
Because there was a time there where Krejci was such a point producer, that was their first scoring line.
Yeah, no, it's true. No, Krejci was their number one offensive center for most of that run. For sure. Absolutely.
And so they could use Bergeron in a more secondary role.
So I see you saying Krejci's faded to the point where they need Bergeron's offense.
Bingo.
Yeah, fair enough. I'd say that's largely accurate, Maz.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, Love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
12 show on the shot clock. LeBron works off a Nance screen, gets doubled, feeds back to JR right side. JR once more to LeBron between the circles, heads to his left, works on Paul George, gets to the basket, lays it high off the window, and scores over the outstretched arm of Steven Adams as LeBron James now has 36 points. And with 49 seconds remaining, he's given the Cavaliers a 115-106 lead, and the Thunder take another timeout.
Jim Murray now has the Cavs beating the Celtics in five games.
Don't
in the East Finals.
Words in my mouth, the both of you ball busters about this. No, they just, it's blatantly obvious.
You're now
the
scared.
Naked eye.
You're now scared of the Cavs.
Yeah, Murray, I heard you said we were going to get swept.
It's a different looking team than they were when the Malthy Peanut was there, screwing everything up. They're digging in defensively. They look like they're having a good time. Jordan Clarkson looks like a difference maker. Same with Rodney Hood. They're getting buckets.
Two games.
It's two games. I know. Very small sample size, but it's a little concerning because if you've watched this team, as I have, because I was enjoying laughing at the Cavaliers because I didn't think they were going to be a concern come playoff time, they're completely different. So it's a small concern. Just a small one.
You?
Listen, I had the Cavs. I told you, if they play right now, Cleveland wins. Cleveland wins. And I base that in part because right now the Celtics aren't playing that great. So, you know, that's part of it. But I ultimately what you're asking is this. Are the Cavs legit?
Are they legit since the trade?
Yeah, that's what I mean. What else would I be talking about?
Because you had the Cavs being the Celtics even before they made these trades.
This is true, but they've revamped the roster. Is this new Cavs team legit? Yes.
But what I'm saying, you didn't need the trades to say they were legit.
No, but I'm telling you, even after the personnel overhaul, that they're legit. These young guys are making a difference there.
Oh, I needed the trade. They look checked out. LeBron looked done. This team that they played last night, Oklahoma City Thunder, it's a very good athletic team. The last time that they played them, or at least the last time they were there, they got smoked. It was something ridiculous a couple of Saturdays back. This time, I mean, it looked kind of ugly in the first quarter. They were getting beat up on the boards, but by the end of the game, they were completely out-hustling them.
And they're without Love still.
Right.
So now look, Love is limited. Okay, he's hardly a defensive stalwart, but as a spot-up three-point shooter, as a big guy, he can be problematic on the offensive end. I mean, he can make shots from out there, and so he'll help. Like, you know, if you look at it and say, depending on what lineup they have on the floor, if they go small, fine, LeBron's got four shooters out there with him.
It's as simple as this. Before, there was no chemistry. Now they have it. It's blatantly obvious.
I don't think there's any question, Murray. The new Cavs are legit. They're legit. Now, again, if the Celtics pick up a player, and Tatum and Brown get back on their horses and start playing like they did early in the year, then that thing could go either way, depending on home court. But I'm telling you, I don't have faith in the young guys playing well in the spring. I don't.
Okay, so a couple things. One, I asked again, the lowest scoring NHL MVP in league history. For the first time in months, we have interns. So out of nowhere, we have interns now. Since the company changeover, we didn't have interns, now we do. So Jarrett, thank you for this information. If this is wrong, you blame intern Jarrett.
Did he do this on his own?
I guess.
Now that's resourcefulness.
He showed initiative.
These are the kinds of interns we're looking for.
BU kid.
Tell that kid not to go back to school.
Of course he's a BU kid. I could have told you that.
Frank Shore's class. Thanks, Frank.
The Harvard kids don't do this. They expect it all to be handed to them. That's why they're in Harvard. Harvard kids.
Well, the BC kids certainly.
The BC, forget about. Not even worth discussing.
Now the Tufts kid is buying the station.
And the Northeastern kid is still hungover.
So, Jarrett here from BU. So if it's wrong, then you can blame the BU education. But according to his data, the lowest ranking in scoring NHL MVP is Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, bro.
Chappaquiddick.
Go ahead,
SNL skit.
Go ahead.
The old puck, I'm going to put the biscuit in the basket. What year is this guy playing?
1954, okay. Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's not what your forward can do for you.
19, that sounds like Bobby. 1954, or Jack. 1954, 1955, Toronto Maple Leafs center, Ted Kennedy, ranked 11th in the league in scoring. 11th. And you're asking Bergeron to be the MVP at 31st? Totally unprecedented.
I was not only the liberal lion, but the fabulous forward. Boo.
So bad.
I told
bad.
My brother Bobby.
Stop. Stop now. So listen, the last, okay, I'll just give you the last, like this feels like, last 15 10 to 15 MVPs. Connor McDavid, Patrick Kane, Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Evgeny Malkin, Corey Perry, Henrik Sedin, Ovechkin twice, Crosby, Joe Thornton, Marty St. Louis. I'll stop there. Here's where they ranked in scoring the years they won those MVPs. Ready? First, tied third, first, second, first. And when you're expecting Patrice Bergeron to win the MVP at 31st, this is why I'm saying he's not, maybe he should be, but the way the award goes, it's not a legit consideration when you're 31st in the league in scoring.
That's okay, so I'm playing devil's advocate here a little bit, because I think at the end of the day, you got to be one of the top scorers in the league. The offense is too hard to manufacture and get, so you got to be a lead in that area. But do you think it's at all possible there's been any sort of philosophical shift? In other words, would Ovechkin ever get MVP votes now?
I hope not, but he probably would.
He sucks defensively.
But he probably would.
Okay, so I'm just wondering if with all the new metrics and everything else,
right,
that maybe the hockey world looks at it a little bit differently than they did 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and that a guy like Bergeron might get a little more juice now because he does play the whole sheet. I mean, he covers the whole rink.
I mean, it would just be unprecedented, like wildly unprecedented, for him to be the MVP. But that's just one of the things we're discussing. We are back to your calls. Again, Celtics tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub and NBC Sports Boston. 8 p.m. tip against the Clippers. While the Cavs seem to have new life, the Celts sort of the other way. So we'll see how that goes this evening. And, in fact, we have a call on that very topic. Charlie in Arlington on the Seas. Go ahead, Charlie.
So my biggest problem with Brad Stevens is the fact that he hasn't really turned Kyrie Irving loose offensively. I mean, if you look at what he allowed Isaiah Thomas to do last season, is, you know, huck up 25, 30 shots a game at times, and the offense running through him, why can't he have Irving do that now? Because that team clearly needs more offense, and they're just not getting it from the other guys.
Okay, discuss that. Yeah, I feel like Kyrie dominates. I mean, I don't know how many shots a game he has. I'll trust the caller. It's not what Isaiah Thomas had, but I don't know. It feels like it's all about Kyrie when he's on the floor.
Yeah, but I would say not like it was with Isaiah. Isaiah hogged the ball. He did. He hogged it. And look, we had that discussion last year at the beginning of the season. The ball sticks with him. Now, does it stick with Kyrie? Sure. Not the same way, though. I'm telling you, with Isaiah, it was off the charts. He held the ball a long time. So, honestly, you know what I think it is? I think Stevens would be willing to say to Kyrie, if you got to do it, you do it on your own. I think Irving's more of a team guy than Isaiah is. I think Irving's willing to move the ball, try to develop the other guys. Like, I'm starting to think Kyrie's a pretty good leader. I think he's got some of those qualities.
No, I want the ball in his hands. What I have a bigger issue with, which the coach right now, was given 24 minutes to Semi Ojeleye in that game on Sunday. Like, that guy, what does he do? I know he's a young player, maybe it'll take a little time, but like, for that kid to get 24 minutes in a game like that is absurd to me.
Shots. Gets a shot off quick, too, doesn't he?
Oh, God.
Oh, it takes him 5 minutes, for crying out loud.
Shots per game. What did Isaiah Thomas have last year, Jimmy Stewart?
19.
I was going to say
4.
I'll look at. Oh, you have it exactly. Good.
19.4?
Yes.
And what's Kyrie at this year?
I bet
18.5.
Oh.
So you guess while we have the numbers.
Sorry.
Why don't we just go straight to the numbers?
Because it's more fun to guess.
I apologize. No, it is. So it's basically the same.
Yeah. Doesn't feel that way, though, does it?
No, it does to me. When I watch portions of the game, I think it's the Kyrie show. It's all Kyrie. I do feel that way. So, I mean, the numbers don't bear out that caller. That's, Kyrie does shoot as much as Isaiah did.
Of course, if they had Hayward, he wouldn't. But that's another story for another day.
But they don't have, they do, I mean, is that finally catching up to him, that lack of a second guy?
Yes, it definitely is, because the young guys aren't producing with any regularity.
We've got Justin in the car and Patrice Bergeron. Hi, Justin.
Hey, Felger. I got three quick points on the Bruins and why I think their windows are just opening, as opposed to what you guys are saying with the core kind of coming to a close. One, I think the core is rejuvenated by the coaching change, so their peak performance is going to go another few years. Two, the D-man, the young guys have kind of come out of nowhere, and their improvement has lessened my worry about losing Chara.
So,
and
Justin, let me just stop you, because you weren't listening. We said it might be the last run of Chara and Bergeron playing like this. The team's in good shape for the next decade. It should be. They don't bollocks it up like they did the last time. But you got a lot of good youth. You got a cornerstone defenseman, which is like the most important thing in the league right now in McAvoy. And you should be in good shape. The coach ain't going to last 10 years. I'd be stunned. The last one lasted too long. You know, you'll probably cycle into another coach at some point. It's just the way it works in that league. But the team is in good shape going forward. We're talking about with Bergeron and Chara as the lead engine of this team. This might be one of the last roundups you get with those two guys.
Definitely.
Playing like they're playing. I mean, Chara, how much longer do you expect him to hang on and play this well?
Is he 41 now?
40. I think it's 41 in a month or two. Something like
that.
I mean,
like, you got to be realistic at some point. Oh, that's right. I forgot. We can be realistic about Chara, but not about Brady at age 40.
Well, Brady's right. Still the MVP. Chara's, you know, not. He's no longer a Norris guy. So Chara looks at least a little bit more like his age. But either way, that was a question. The last roundup with these guys, playing the way they're playing. Like, I think they'll both be on the team next year. Bergeron's going nowhere. And Chara, I actually hope they re-sign him to a team-friendly deal. I hope he comes back. But, boy, they've been great. They've been tremendous. Are they going to play like this? You know, how many more years like this can you depend on them looking like this? Especially Chara. That's really the one. We've got Josh in Rutland on the Red Sox. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good.
So 3 points. I'll make my first two quick, and then before I get to my main point. First two is Celtics. No, they're not going to beat the Cavaliers this year. They're just not ready. They're not scoring well enough. They're just not good enough yet. They're going to get killed. Second, Bruins. Same thing. They're all kids. Not going to win this year. Not ready, but they will win the next few years. My third and main point is the Red Sox. These fools, for lack of a better word, that I've heard call in today saying they want to re-sign Jackie Bradley Jr. and Mookie Betts to these big contracts, you are absolutely insane. If you think that maybe 5 to 8 tops, and that's tops, good defensive plays that no other defensive player can make, tops, good batting for, on average, 4 to 5
hey, Josh,
bats every game.
Josh, no one said Bradley. You don't think Betts is a foundational player?
No, absolutely not. No. I mean, he's defensive great, sure. But if you think you can get better offensive bats, and that's what matters in this game. You need offense. This team has seriously offensive deficiency.
Is Betts a good enough hitter to be a trend, you know, foundational player for you?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe you disagree with the caller?
Yeah. And again, I would say if you think of it in the basketball terms of 1, 2, and 3, right? Like, you got to have those three guys.
Betts is a 2.
No better than that. No better than that. I mean, he's not a 1. No two ways about that. So he's a 2 or a 3, somewhere in that area. You want to say 2.5, and we'll split the difference? Fine. Either way, he's part of that group. Yes, he's good enough. Yes.
Greg in Shrewsbury on the Bees. Go.
Hey, Maz and Murray, how are you? Felger, I got a question for you. Beginning of the Bruins season, you said they were all done, weren't going anywhere, weren't going to make it. Now you got them winning the President's Trophy. Were you the sports talk radio crazy at the time, or did you really feel that way? And what do you think specifically has changed about them?
So what's changed about them? Cassidy woke them up with the goaltender change, and it all sort of started there. They were really banged up to begin the year, so they got healthy. And then once you got healthy and Cassidy sort of shook things up with the goalie change, what happened was the kids played well. Not over the top. You're not being led by the kids. They're just sort of filling out the roster, and they're playing well. And you're getting an MVP quality season from Bergeron, and Chara hasn't looked this good in a couple of years. And Marchand's been awesome. Like, your veterans have played great, with the exception of Krejci. Backes has been great. So, like, everyone's played well.
I mean, in terms of their veteran, you know, performance now on ice, they've gotten great leadership from their veterans. Like, really. I mean, even Riley Nash. Riley Nash has played well.
And when I say they're going to win the President's Trophy, I'm just looking at the numbers. They're 1 point behind Tampa with 2 games in hand. Like, they have the best record in the league. And I keep expecting them to come back to earth, and they won't. So at some point, you just got to say, well, this is the kind of year it is. This is what they are. And that's just sort of like, do I think they're the best team in the league? No. Do I think they're like worthy of the President's Trophy? No. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm a slave to the facts.
So this is a long answer question. I'm going to ask you quickly. Where would they be without McAvoy?
Less.
A lot less.
Yeah, they'd be much less. Huge
I just think
he's such a
huge part of it. He is 22 minutes a night, and he's 20 years old. Like, he's the best defenseman on the team.
Final word comes your way next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, only one place to go. Town Fair Tire. Best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. So we had some audio of Steve Buckley talking to Red Sox President of Baseball Ops, Dave Dombrowski, today, who was at the picnic table. And we find out that Dave Dombrowski likes to hang at Dunkin' Donuts. Not just hang at Dunkin' Donuts, because that's a good time. It's get bothered, inundated, if you will, by Red Sox fans.
Yeah, Dave, hi. I was just wondering. My name's Mark. I live in Watertown. I was just, like, are you getting J.D. Martinez? What are you doing?
Oh, my God.
Because I came down here, and I thought you guys would have some players, and I want to see J.D.
Dave, what? Why do you do nothing this offseason? Why are you sticking with David Price? I mean, come on, guy. He don't like it here. He's no good. And let me tell you something, Dombrowski. I'd rather root for a losing winner than a winning loser. You know what I mean. Huh?
Yeah. So, Dave, what I was saying is, why haven't you done nothing? I want to know why. Like, I bought my tickets. I came down here. I flew all the way down here on JetBlue. It cost me an arm and a leg. And I want to know why you haven't gotten J.D. Martinez.
Dave, I don't know why you didn't do nothing. But I'll tell you, I'm down here for the spring. But when I get back in the summer, you've been to Dillboy? You ever been to Dillboy Stadium? You come watch me play softball. I'm a born slugger. Get me down to you. Get me out there. I'll work on my glove. You need a slugger. Come to Dillboy. You'll see. I crush. Dave, why don't you play Vasquez more behind the plate? I mean, Sandy Leon. Are you kidding me? Vasquez is the guy. And what's his first name? Dave. Dave, what's his first name? It's Christian. He's a good man. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like, really, what a nightmare.
It's unbelievable the reports that are rolling in, though, of the Dunkin' Donuts locations where he hangs. We've had people tweet in, text in. He hangs at the Kenmore Square Dunkin' Donuts every morning. We got another guy saying it's Cleveland Circle. I see him there all the time. This is from a coworker of mine, a friend of mine. So he's
you have no friends.
Well, this is true. Coworker,
colleague
of mine. By the way, he is at Dunkin' Donuts at Washington Square in Brookline at least 4 days a week during the season, the morning after games, and he always sits at a two-person table right in front of the window.
I used to live in that area
every time.
It's wild.
My guy says, I used to walk right by it at 8:15 every morning when I lived a street over last summer, and he was there every single day. Cup of medium coffee, laptop, half the time on a cell phone. Seriously.
Yeah, he's a creature of habit.
It's unbelievable.
He's a creature.
It's almost like he's looking to be noticed. Like, oh, maybe they'll come talk to me. Because he hasn't done anything. He's got all this time in his hands.
Yeah, he hires LaRussa to do everything for him.
He probably eats off the Didi Smart menu.
One last piece of sound here before we wrap up and make way for Adam Jones. Martin on the Cape called in and worked blue today.
He's Martin on the Cape.
Oh, this
the
was
beast.
Good.
Go, Martin. This was good.
Hey, Murray, don't worry. The Celts will be fine as long as Thesis still produces points and rebounds. You know, Jack Palance and City Slickers throws the perfect one-liner at Billy Crystal that LeBron should use on Isaiah Thomas. You know, bigger than you.
You can't say that.
Just because you change one letter, Martin, right, doesn't make it FCC compliant.
The past tense is still, yeah. No. Even if you go past tense on us, and he went past tense.
Well, you could change one letter. It'd just be a different word. Like, shut the door.
Shut.
Right? That's allowed.
It is.
I'm just saying.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.